Warning, the following audio transmission is based on theory and is intended for entertainment purposes only. It's Doomsday and its affiliates will not be held liable for anything your dumbass does. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome everybody to It's Doomsday Podcast. Today is January 5th, 2024. Time is 11:51 a.m. And joining me from the Hive Life Conference is Cassie. Cassie, how are you today?
Great.
Thank you for coming on the podcast. How hard did Jay have to convince you to walk over here?
Oh no, not hard.
Not hard? Okay, so you came all the way down from Canada to be here.
Mm-hmm, yes.
How long, did you drive? Did you fly?
We flew down.
Yeah, okay, I bet that's a lot easier.
It was easier, although there was some issues at the airport.
There's always issues at the airport. So, you've been beekeeping for 8 years. Okay, one question I've been asking all the beekeepers that I've got so far, what's the biggest crucial mistake you've made beekeeping that you're still kicking yourself for to this day?
Oh, geez, I don't even know. I have a really, I work for a family business. Mm-hmm. So my father-in-law is always a phone call away. But I would say probably in the early years, just being a little bit rough with the queen frame and maybe it being my responsibility for, you know, losing a queen.
So what in that realm, I didn't get to even think about that question. What happens if a colony loses a queen? Do they just select a new one?
Well, it depends on the time of year. If there's eggs, there has to be eggs to build a new queen. So as long as that queen was already laying eggs, then they can feed those eggs royal jelly and produce a new queen. But then she would also have to be able to mate with drones. So it would have to be within the mating season. And then she would be a viable queen. If she doesn't mate, then you have a dud. So all the conditions have to be perfect, and I am from Canada, so we have a shorter mating window. Now when I'm managing a hive, I'm paying very close attention to making sure I'm being very careful with my queen because she's gold.
Right. Yeah. So, and you informed me that this is your first time down here.
To Hive Life, yep, and to Tennessee, yep.
And to Tennessee.
Yes.
So what do you think of Tennessee so far?
We haven't had a lot of chance to do a lot of exploring. We are planning to stay for an extra week after. So I've kind of been here at the conference center for most of my time. And my 13-year-old made us go to Red Lobster. The biscuits were delicious. But we've just sort of done a little bit of driving around. And I was surprised at how many amusement parks there were.
Yeah. So this... I really enjoy the state. Okay. I try to get out here every chance I get. Yeah. I don't live in the state, but I try to make the trip over. There are things like Dollywood.
Yes.
It's like not comparable to any other park. So it's like if my wife says, oh, we should go to Dollywood, I'm like, yes, let's go to Dollywood.
Okay.
Like right now,
that's
let's
a good
go.
Tip. We'll
yeah.
go.
All right. So you're here working with the kids and the bees.
I am.
And my first thought when that came up is, so I'm an EMT.
Okay.
And I work in law enforcement outside of this, so we talk about dangers of things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you teach kids about the potential dangers of bees? Like if they're allergic, like how to, you know, if they would suffer from anaphylactic shock, you know, what do you do in that situation, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, from a different angle, I would say. So I do, the bulk of the presentations I'm doing for kids, I do field trips. So at our facility, we have a classroom. So we bring kids to us and we do a field trip program, and that's gonna be inside a classroom. So there's no live bees. There may or may not be an observation hive depending on the time of the year. But we're educating about things like life cycle, who lives in a hive, the difference between native bees and imported pollinators, honeybees. We're talking about the role of a beekeeper, civic duty, social responsibility, all these kinds of hot topics. But we also, and so that's the bulk because that's where I get most of my clients from. But I also do beekeeping with kids, mostly sort of homeschool groups or private programs, like people would, a family would come in with their mm-hmm. individual family. And I do that on purpose because I want the kids to be with an adult so that if something should happen, that we have an adult with us. We're trained to manage it and everything, but you know, it would be scary for a kid if they got stung and their parent or adult wasn't with them. So I'm sort of mitigating all of those dangers before we even get into the program. Kids are required to be fully suited up. We're talking about safety. So one of the things I do with really little kids is I get them to show me what a mad bear looks like. And then I get them to show me what a scared person looks like. And so then I say to them, you know, if you act like a bear, then you're going to get treated like a bear. And bees are scared of bears. So some of the things that we do before we even go outside into the bee yard is we practice our slow breathing. We practice our slow moving. We get our wiggles out. We get our bears out. And we get that all out of our system so that once we go into the hive, the kids are, I can say to them, I tell them before we go outside, if you're acting like a bear, I'm going to remind you. And it's not about me being mean to you. It's about me keeping you safe and, more importantly, keeping the bees safe. Because if they sting you, they die. So then when we're outside, if the kids are starting, then I say to them, oh, bear, remember, we need to act like a beekeeper. Beekeepers are calm and move slowly.
Right.
So before we ever go outside, we do a presentation. We talk about the safety, all the safety concerns. We talked about how your behavior is and sensing and responding. I talk about using your senses to identify the temperament of a hive. So I'm looking, I'm listening, I'm smelling, I'm taking in my environment. If it's a rainy, crappy day, the bees are going to be crappy. If it's a sunny, beautiful day with lots of forage in the environment, the bees are probably going to be happy. And you know, I try to bring it back to things that kids can understand. So if someone took the roof off of your house and it was rainy and crappy outside, you'd probably be mad too. Mm-hmm. But if somebody was moving really slowly, talking to you really nicely, and the roof came off your house on a beautiful sunny day, as long as it's going to go back on, you're probably okay.
Yeah,
right?
Makes sense.
So I try to really talk in ways that are, I believe that kids can understand the complex topics and even the complex words, but I try to talk in a way that kids can understand and relate to, because my mission is having people leave our facility feeling curious and excited about bees instead of scared.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So are the kids, how receptive are the kids to this?
They, I mean, is it like 100% get it?
So awesome. Oh, yeah. That's awesome. So I'm assuming all these kids are just like fired up and excited to go do this.
Yep. They arrive, and I mean certainly, and like, you know, I'm an expert now at reading the room. So I can see, I can pinpoint, like, oh, that one's gonna require some attention. This one I don't have to worry about. Like, right. I'm pretty good at identifying that. And so, you know, that person's going to get more of my attention and time. But, you know, it's even things like, you know, as you're setting up your environment. Like, so the first thing that you're doing when you go to, an emergency is you're assessing the environment. Like, where are the safeties and dangers mm-hmm. here? And so my apiary is set up in such a way that it's like safety first. I've got hives set up. So my regular normal hive that I go into is in a fenced garden. And so I'm telling them ahead of time, it's like, sometimes I'm going to let you into the garden and sometimes I'm going to make you be behind the fence. And the physical size of the garden is set up in such a way that it gives the bees enough trajectory to fly up and out. So that sort of 10-foot square with the hive in the middle gives them enough space that they're not hitting people's faces when they're flying out. So I'm thinking about all of these kinds of things, that there's no obstructions on the ground, that someone's not going to trip and fall. All of the things that can make that the physical environment set up for success, we're going to start with that. Then we're going to do the lesson, and then I'm going to be watching, and I make all of the kids eye contact me. So if I'm going to get to the point where they're holding the frame, because some days I'm going to be like, today's not a good day to hold the frame. we're not doing that today, so I might just show it to you, mm-hmm. or you might have to be behind the fence. But on a day that we get to that point where, yeah, today's a safe day and a good day, and this is a good person who's going to be able to hold the frame, then I'll start by, like, I'll come up to them and I'm like, I need you to look in my eyes. I need you to use your words and tell me you're ready to take the frame from me. And then I pass it over slowly, and I'm constantly role modeling my calm behavior. And then I'm going to hold it to them. And I'm going to say, you need to make eye contact with me. Tell me you're ready to let it go. And I'm ready. Okay. Now yell at me in any word that you need to when you need me to take it back. So if it's take it back or I know it's time for me to take
right.
it back.
Yeah, because you don't want to drop that
no,
frame.
No, I don't want to drop it. I don't want some, I don't. And I also, between me and you, of course, my number one concern is that the kid is going to get hurt. That's my number one concern. But to them, I'm explaining that it's just as much about caring for the little creatures as it is about them.
Right.
So between you and me, they're more important. We all know that. but what I'm trying to, I guess, instill in the kids is that every creature is important. So every bee on that frame is as important. I don't want them to get hurt. I don't want you to get hurt, but I don't want them to get hurt either.
Makes a lot of sense. So your program that you have set mm-hmm. up with the kids, is it like a situation where it's a one-time thing, or do they mm-hmm. come back again and again? Is there like levels of...
Yeah, I have both options. I have lots of different options. So before I came over to Honeybee Center, I worked for our local recreation department, out of recreation programmer. So I did lots of different things. You know, you'd have like a 8-week preschool program or a one-off, you know, craft program or educational workshops or whatever it might be. And so that's my comfort level. That's my, you know, that's what I'm used to. So at Honeybee Center, I like to set up a lot of different opportunities so that all different people can get involved at different levels. If you want to come for like a one-off, you don't really want to get in with the bees, but you want to just sort of learn a little bit more because you're curious, I have a Saturday drop-in that's free, and it's sort of, you know, we advertise it as such. I have a staff in there who's not a beekeeper, but she's bee knowledgeable, and that's a place that you can just come in, explore all of our science, you know, ask your bee related questions, just kind of get, you know, get your toes wet. All the way up to, you know, we've done commercial beekeeping courses for adults. It's a year-long program where you can learn to be a commercial beekeeper.
So I was going to ask you if you worked with adults too.
Yes.
And who was more receptive, the adults or the kids? Who is it easier to work with?
It's such an interesting niche because unlike other maybe it's the same, I don't know. But in the beekeeping industry, you generally only get people who are interested. Like people who are like, hey, bees aren't coming to a beekeeping experience.
That makes
right?
sense.
Yeah. So everybody is interested on different levels. And I mean, there's been kids who are know-it-alls that have come in mm-hmm. and kids who are receptive. And there's been adults that are know-it-alls and there's adults that are receptive. And it's just about, you know, what type of a human you are. So I'm not going to answer your question, but I will tell you that I like working with kids better because the turnover is quicker. So
really?
When the kid comes in, is like, I hate bees. I got stung once and I hate bees. From the minute they step in the door to the 60 minutes later after they leave, I can turn them around. No problem.
That's awesome.
Right? Because they're curious. They're open-minded. They're not sort of weighted down by all of the things that society tells them.
Right.
I'm a 44-year-old woman. Society tells me I shouldn't be interested in insects. I should think that insects are ew, gross. Like people who say, "Oh, I hate spiders," they probably don't. Society tells them they should.
Right.
And so then once I could get them in, and I could be like, you know, well, you know, actually none of the spiders we have here in Canada can harm you. So there's actually really nothing to be scared of here in Canada.
Right.
They're not going to believe me. An adult's not going to believe me. But when I sit down and have that conversation with a kid and I'm just like, well, here's the facts, you know, boom, 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 boom. And isn't it cool that they can do this cool thing? You know, like, isn't it cool that a 10-day-old bee can, like, build their own beeswax, like, by eating nectar and then construct a hive with their feet? Like, isn't that amazing? Like, they can do that in, like, 10 days. They can build all that comb. And kids are kind of like, and adults are, of course, amazed by that information, but leave, I still love bees.
Right? So I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
my every time I sit someone down, I get a new piece of information and my mind is just blown. So one thing I've been asking everybody too when they sit down is, what is that one thing that has like absolutely blown your mind that you find mesmerizing about the bees?
It's the sensing and responding aspect, I think, within the colony structure. So it's that idea that whatever is needed, the colony adjusts accordingly. And so, you know, to get all corny here, it's like, this is what our society is missing, right? Like, so within a bee colony, let's just say, for example, if there's no beeswax, if they move into a new home and there's no comb built, then you're going to get a higher percentage of comb producers, construction bees, because they can't do anything until the comb is built. They can't store nectar and they can't lay eggs, right? Once the comb is all built and the season changes and there's lots of nectar in the environment, then perhaps that colony switches over to being nectar collectors because that's what's needed at that time. If there's no nurse bees, they can't raise a queen, so then more of the colony will sort of adjust as needed, and yet there's no verbal communication in the hive. They sense what is needed and they adjust accordingly. And to me, it's just like that the concept of this is, wow, if we could do that, like, wouldn't we be in such a better place if we could do that, if we could just sense what is needed? And so I try to share that message with kids. It's like a mom senses what her baby needs and can respond accordingly, or, you know, or try to go through all of the actions to meet that need. But somehow as a society, we haven't quite got there yet. And I think that I think we can, and I think that we know. And I do see sort of, you know, things are changing and, you know, people are, you know, evolving, and I'm hopeful. But I think that's the most amazing and mind-blowing thing to me.
So it's like you say that they sense us, and I keep like going back in my head, like, are these bees clairvoyant? Or do they have telepathy? Like, what's going, like, maybe, you know, how are they communicating so well?
Yeah.
Because, you know, when some of the things that I've learned so much this weekend just by sitting people down and interviewing them is, there's so much going on within this community, and some of these bees, you know, they're dying, they're being born, and they're traveling all these miles away from the hive, and then they're coming back. It's like, and they're not taking notes, they're not writing stuff down, they're not leaving a voicemail on the phone saying, hey, I'll be back in 3 hours, I went to go get some pollen, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And they're communicating with smells, you know, like, this is one of the things that I find, this is one of the things that a lot of kids get sort of fascinated with, is like the queen smell, the queen pheromone. And how I explain that to them is, it's like, have you ever been to someone else's house and it smells different?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they cook different food, or maybe they're using different shampoo, or something. Like, everybody's mom smells different. If you come give me a hug, I probably smell like my shampoo, and then you go give someone else's mom a hug and maybe they smell differently. But we don't ever think about that. Like, we experience it, but I don't know that we ever really, like, fully process that until I've, like, said it to you. Now you're going to notice.
Right.
Right? But that's one of the ways that they communicate and like, I mean, that's how they find their way back home. So, of course, they scout, but also they can smell their way back home. And so I think that it's like we just aren't engaging all of our senses, but they perhaps are. One of the things that blew my mind is bees, bumblebees particularly, will land on a flower and they have stinky feet. Have you heard this?
No, I have not.
Bumblebees will land on a flower and they have stinky feet. And then they'll while they're at that flower, they eat the pollen and drink the nectar. And so then their pheromone is on that flower. And so then when they fly away, the next bumblebee to come to that flower can smell their stinky feet and knows that the nectar is depleted. So it's not worth their time to stop at that flower because there's no nectar there right now. As that scent dissipates, the nectar is regenerating. And so then the less stinky feet smell on the flower, it means the more nectar that's available. So it's a time strategy, right? They can be more efficient because they're using their sense of smell. And I say this to some of the young beekeepers I'm working with, is that really think about all of the aspects of your facility. Like, so when you're going out to hive, smell it. What does it smell like right now? Listen, is that, and you might not know what it means right now, but once you've done it long enough and once you've visited enough hives, suddenly you're going to be like, oh, that one sounds different. Something's going on. What is that? And then you look and maybe it's queenless. Maybe the sound is a queenless sound. but you start connecting those dots that, you know, we don't generally do because we're so in, we're so trained now to like sit down in front of a video game and, mm-hmm. and it entertains us. We don't have to use all of our different senses when we're doing that, when we're having that experience, you know? So I'm really encouraging people with beekeeping, particularly children, this is where they are more receptive because adults will say, oh, no, no, I can't smell anything when I go to a hive. And even with beekeepers, I'm like, you do. Because, you know, the beekeeper, like, I just know when something's going on with the hive. But it's because they just are, they maybe subconsciously, I'm not sure, but they're accessing all of those senses. They're looking and seeing what's the weather like, what's the activity around the hive, what's the smell, what's the sound, you know. With beekeeping, you can also use your taste. So beekeepers, in fact, I think, and you know, there's some stat, I don't know if it's true or not, that beekeepers live the longest, but I think it's because we engage all of our senses.
It's very, very interesting.
I think so, yeah.
So another question I got, because I'm wanting to form different opinions,
yes.
you know, but get yep. everybody's opinion. In your opinion, right now, in the current age we're in, what is the biggest threat to the bees?
Well, varroa mite.
Okay.
loss of habitat. You know, I say, it's funny because it's going both ways, right? Like, I feel like the monocrop culture is... I live in a place where honeybees are not native. They're imported. They're an agricultural tool, as is, you know, USA. And as, same here. And probably it's because the sheer size of the crop makes it more efficient for the farmer to produce that crop for the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want, you know, I mean, people, I want people in every tax bracket to be able to afford fresh fruit. So I want people who are low income to be able to have access to fresh fruit. And the way that you do that is you get a farmer who's really efficient at one monocrop because they can drive the cost down to produce a blueberry, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the crop size is not conducive to native species. They can't fly that far. They can't physically fly that far. And if they're ground nesting, which 90% of our bees are, 70 to 90% of our bees are, ground nesting, if any tilling is happening, you kill the bees. So native bees are no longer able to do the job in a large crop setting. And so what we're sort of experiencing is native bees sort of moving into city centers where there's maybe more resource for them. But that sort of countryside, the agriculture, is moving towards maybe more of a honeybee strategy. So it's not a bad thing. It's not maybe like the end solution. Like I think that, you know, if budget was not an issue, then, you know, growing your own produce, sharing with your next door neighbor, you know, barter system trading, wouldn't that be great? But in the meantime, the temporary solution is in fact honeybees, because when you put bees into that large monocrop, then that farmer can produce more yield. Because the bees are pollinating and in some cases producing 50% more fruit for that farmer, which the native bees, like I said, can't just physically fly to those flowers. So some of the things that are really affecting bees, unless we stop our population growth, I don't really know what the answer is right now, but this is a temporary solution. But in terms of the physical management of a hive, I would say that my biggest challenge on the day-to-day is varroa, because varroa are bringing, you know, once you have varroa, I mean, everything else is, you got to deal with the varroa. But also they spread disease when they're in the hive. So I'd say that that's the biggest like hive issue. Culturally, I would say it's monocrop culture.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We need it, but you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to me, I understand. Like,
yeah.
When you're talking about the monocrop side of that, I understand mm-hmm. the benefits to that.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. How it is beneficial
yep.
to lower the cost of food to get it out there to
yep.
everybody. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely cannot stand our commercialism mm-hmm. and how we're pushing.
Mm-hmm.
Soda and fast food mm-hmm. and potato chips and not fresh
yeah.
fruits and vegetables like we should.
Yeah.
So if there's more bees needed for that, I can get on,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? I can
yeah.
get on board with that. We are now in the society to where it's okay to be unhealthy.
Oh yeah.
Because you have a doctor
yeah.
and the doctor will give you meds. I don't want to go off on too big
yeah,
of a tangent
yeah.
there.
You know, and I will, and this is one of the things that's really, really interesting about my position. I see lots of different people. So in 2023, I had 5,500 kids come through my education program. Often they come with adults. I do adult programs as well. So I see lots of different people, lots of different walks of life. And I would say that I am seeing some positive light, because what I'm starting to experience is that people want to do something. They don't necessarily know what it is yet, but they have that same fear. I don't know if that's the right word, but, you know, concern that it's in, and this, and the issue is that it's cheaper to buy a bag of chips than it is to buy an apple. And if you're on a limited income,
right?
So, and I mean, and so, you know, I think that, but when you set up someone with this, like, this is a big solution, you got to do all these big things to make it work, that's too overwhelming. People aren't going to do that. But if you give people strategies that are easy, like for me, one of the things that happened when I started beekeeping is all of a sudden it's like I wanted to plant more pollen producing plants in my yard. And so it started with some herbs, you know, bees love herbs. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to plant my own cilantro and parsley and chives, or things that are really easy. And then all of a sudden I look back, so 8 years later, never had thought of it. And I look back and it's like, oh, I'm growing now my own lettuce. I'm growing my own tomatoes for fun.
Right.
But it's like, I don't, things like, I was like, oh, well, why wouldn't I grow my own chives? Then I don't have to go out and buy green onions. And, you know, like you're cooking something up and I'm like, oh, I have no green onions. Oh, I got chives. Right? And it's the bees that inspired me to do that, right?
It
Baby
is.
Steps.
And
yeah.
It's our society is extremely manipulated. You can go out and you could buy a tomato once at the store,
mm-hmm.
eat it, mm-hmm. be done with it, and it's over.
Yes.
Or you can go buy a pack of seeds.
Yes.
For $1.39
yep.
and regrow those same tomatoes every
yeah.
year and save that money with a little bit of effort.
Yeah.
And our society has disconnected from that.
And it's because, too, they think that people want a short-term solution, right? So the problem with bees is people are like, so if you plant the tomato plant, bumblebee pollination, you're feeding bumblebees. But if I plant it today, in the spring, if I plant that plant, but there wasn't bees there from last season because there was no food for them before, then in this first season, they're not going to pollinate that tomato because they're not there. So then you're not maybe going to get yield. And then I'm like, oh, well, why would I plant tomatoes? Nothing, they didn't grow this year.
And
right?
I've heard a lot of people,
yeah.
you know, I see a lot of people out there, because a lot of our listeners are in the homesteading community
yes.
or the survivalist community.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys garden. And I hear
yeah.
them go back and forth all the time. Well, I tried this 1 year and then I stopped.
Yes.
And I never put the connection together, but maybe that's why they
yeah.
didn't get that yield. Maybe that's why they didn't do well.
I would encourage people to do it for at least 2 years before making a
determination
decision.
To
yeah,
not
exactly.
Do it.
Because one of the things, like, we put mason bee houses in our backyard, and in the first year they didn't come. But if you think that the life cycle of a mason bee is that everything dies off except for the overwintering, you know, pupa, then in the next generation, so if everything is, if there was no queen there last year or no mom there last year, then there is no pupa this year. So then next spring when you plant your tomatoes, there's nobody there to pollinate it. But if you give it a couple of years and those bees, you know, in the next season sort of find their way over to your garden, then when they overwinter next year, you're going to have pollination. So one of the things about, one of the honeys we have is it's called a fireweed honey. So fireweed is the first weed to grow in our interior up north after a forest fire. So a forest fire comes through, wipes out the landscape. The first thing to grow back is this fireweed plant. Well, you're not going to get honey off of the fireweed in the first year because the bees weren't there from the fire to be able
okay.
to find the
Makes
plant,
sense.
Right? So you can't get a crop, a honey crop off of fireweed until the second year because the plant has to come back in order for the bees to find it. This is a very simplified, you know, explanation.
Right, yeah.
But this would be the same as tomatoes. If I plant them this year and nobody's there, well, then they're not pollinating it, so I'm going to get less of a yield. Almost all of our colorful fruits and vegetables require some sort of insect pollination, right? So if you don't have any bees this year, it's not going to come back next year. But if you planted it this year and somebody found it, then next year you're going to double the amount of bees and then, you know, quadruple and so on moving forward. So what you're doing is you need to sort of set the stage. You have to give it some time. But if you grow it, they will come.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Cassie, before
yeah.
we're out of here, I've been doing this to everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. So have you tried this?
No.
Spartan bee bread.
Okay.
Okay, it's like my big mission to get all the beekeepers to try this.
Okay.
I eat three of these a day.
Okay, yeah. Okay, bee bread is what, I don't know if it's actual bee bread, but
it's actual bread.
Okay, yeah.
So this is, it's the real deal.
Yeah, okay. Like I can just
Bite it off. Tell me what you think. I've been getting a lot of different opinions on this.
Well, it tastes a little bit like hay. Like sweet hay fruit leather.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's a new one.
Mm-hmm. It tastes like bee bread.
So I get like a sourwood taste out of it.
Okay, yeah, it's sour, yeah.
And I'm on like a really limited diet on what I consume. So I bought this because I wanted to fill the nutritional gaps.
Okay,
because there's
yep.
all kinds of like natural omegas and vitamins and minerals. Right. It is so nutrient dense, it's insane.
Yeah.
So I started taking this after about a week and a half. I started getting like this kind of boundless energy. Didn't want to sit still. Wanted to get up. Wanted to move around.
Yep.
Not caffeine like shaky energy, but wanted to move.
Yep.
After about 2 weeks, it leveled off.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, I feel good now. It's it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
Into that 2 weeks, mental clarity.
Oh.
Extreme mental clarity. Like I can form sentences better. I'm not stumbling over words. I'm using more correct words. I'm forming better thought out sentences like instantly. It's just been so much better.
What are the ingredients?
Bee bread.
That's it, eh?
Yeah, bee bread and they put some like black currant and apple cinnamon in there for flavor.
Apples, but yeah, it's apples. I was right. Fruit leather. I know we get a lot of runners that come into Honeybee Center to buy pollen from us.
Mm-hmm.
Pollen has, I mean, it's going to,
Well, it's like labeled as a superfood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're using it for long-term energy. You know, people who are like a vegetarian can consume it, right? It's a high protein supplement. I mean, you're not going to eat 6 ounces of pollen probably. But it doesn't go bad either as long as you keep it dry, right? Yeah.
Well, you know, that's something that's very interesting. About the survival community and why they're so interested in the honey is because of the how long it doesn't go bad.
It never goes bad. Yeah.
Right. It has an indefinite shelf life. And out of all the things we can stock on our shelves as survivalists, there's nothing we can really go out there and buy that has an indefinite shelf life.
Yes.
I mean,
no. Honey. Yeah.
That's about it.
It never goes bad. It does crystallize, but you can just warm it up. And actually, I like to think of crystallized honey as glittery honey.
Okay, that's a good way to look at it. But Cassie, I want to thank you for coming on the show. And if there's anything you want to plug or tell the listeners about what you're doing or like your business or what's going on, let them know.
I can give you my social media.
Okay, plug your social media.
So I'm Cassie Jabot from Honeybee Center in Surrey, BC, Canada. You can find us on www.honeybeecenter.com. We're also on social media. I'm at Honeybee Center Kids on Instagram, and I'd love to see you there. If you ever have any questions about kids and bees, beekeeping, bees, I would certainly love to answer all of your questions. So find me at www.honeybeecenter.com or on Instagram at Honeybee Center Kids.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
This is an emergency action message. At approximately 1 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, NORA is tracking 15 ICBM nuclear missiles inbound to the following cities: Orlando, Miami, Pittsburgh, Dover, Newark, Richland, Philadelphia, New York City, Baltimore, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Boston, Seattle, Detroit. This is an extremely deadly situation. Stay tuned, the next emergency message will be a presidential address.